Infinite Waters Radio. Diving deep, leaving no stone unturned. Elevating the soul, exploring the mind. Question everything. We are the future. Expect the unexpected. Rising higher. Swimming with the dolphins. We deserve more. 360 senses. Explosive. It's now or never. Open your mind.
Greetings, and once again, thank you for diving with us into Infinite Waters Radio. I'm your host, Ralph Smart, and we have a very, very special show today. We have a very special guest, Dr. Carmen Bolta, who has been with us before to dive with us into Infinite Waters, and she's no stranger to Infinite Waters. She's already been here twice, and Dr. Carmen Bolta is the producer of the documentary, The Pyramid Code. I always get excited about the pyramids. They still conjure so much in our imagination. So without further ado, I want to welcome Dr. Carmen.
Hi, Ralph.
Once again, it's great to have you back to dive with us into Infinite Waters. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. And the pyramids are always, they always create a long discussion for me with anyone I talk to. Glad to have you back.
Delighted to be here.
Okay. And anyone can go to this Dr. Carmen's great website, www.pyramidcode.com. And there's a plethora of information there, which you can check out for yourself. And she also has an upcoming tour in November from the 7th to the 21st, if I'm correct, 2011 Egypt tour. All that great stuff on the website. And Dr. Carmen, when I actually saw this great documentary, The Pyramid Code, back in 2009, I was simply blown away. Five episodes. Please just first of all tell me what inspired you to create this great monumental work.
Well, my soul has been tied to Egypt my whole life. And I met Hakim, who's an indigenous wisdom keeper, about 10 years before I started on the Pyramid Code. And I knew that he was going to pass away and that he had some really good secrets. And so my goal was to interview him and then find scientists who would corroborate what he said, because he wasn't ever trying to prove that what he said was correct. He just knew it, which is a different way of being and thinking. So I would say that Hakim himself was the inspiration behind it. And he passed away just as we were editing the Pyramid Code. So we did catch his wisdom. And I also have a lot more in 9 hours of video of him. And now more scientists are coming up with more that corroborates what he said that really didn't fit with anybody else before. So there's an opportunity to make more episodes of it.
Well, 5 hours, it goes on for, and it's so entertaining. I didn't find myself, I just found myself just becoming more interested in it as it went on, more engrossed in it. And you know, you cover so much there, but you've been here twice before, so on the third time we're really going to take it to the next level. We find ourselves living in the information age, and I found that in your documentary you talked of about the ancient Egyptians having very advanced technology, probably more advanced technology than we have today. And a lot of us, you know, we feel that we are very advanced with our technology, such as the iPhone and the BlackBerry. And, you know, where did you get this research that, for instance, the Great Pyramids of Giza may not actually be tombs, because the traditional Egyptologists have said that, okay, these were tombs to bury the dead. You know, please talk about your own findings and your own insights into the technology of the ancients.
Well, this has been driven, I think, by past life memory. And so, I mean, I came in clairvoyant and clairaudient. And so I started having past life memories when I was a little girl. And then I had a real, real drive to get myself to Egypt. And I got there in 1977, the first time, when I was 20-some years old. And then I realized, when I was listening to guides, that my stomach was turning, very much like when I did in the Catholic Church, and my stomach would turn and I'd feel like I was going to pass out, because I knew it was misinformation. I didn't know why, I didn't know what I knew or who was talking in my ear, but there was something wrong with the information. And so I started reading everything in sight. The other thing, the first time I was in the Great Pyramid, I ended up spending an entire afternoon in there with me and the person who brought me in. And I took photographs with a standard film camera, and there were apparitions, pink and green apparitions, in these pictures. So now we're seeing more and more orbs with digital cameras, and they're becoming more complex. But with the film camera, even like crop circles, you know, crop circles start out being a little bit more simple and then grow in complexity, which is what we're seeing. So I knew, I went to check to see if there was something wrong with my camera, and learned there wasn't. And so this really fueled my energy. But then I started reading and reading and reading, and I realized people are just repeating the same old malarkey, and it wasn't adding up. It was not making my heart sing. But when I went into the temples, I would feel something magical happening. So it was a combination of reading everything in sight and doing the research, and then going back to Egypt and having experiences of it. So it took a good long time before those two were able to marry, like the parts that seem true in the literature and experiences in Egypt. Then I started consulting with scientists. And so it's been a long, long road, because I've gone back and read a lot of those texts again, and I'm trying to deconstruct and trace, like, why would Herodotus have said that? And then you learn that he was just a scholar from Greece that came along and met a few people in the village around the pyramids and started chatting them up, and a lot of what they said was just nothing. It wasn't based on anything. Now, when you think about the technology today, we do not have the technology to take the pyramids down, and they're considered un-Islamic. You can't even bomb them. They don't fall down when you bomb them. They've endured earthquakes. They've endured 2-3 world floods, and so they're built to stay, and that's an interesting thing. So we think we're so smart, and we keep repeating the mistakes of other people. So
right.
This was hard-won research. I went there 25 times already. I've lived in Egypt, and I kept myself glued to the plateau. I've done a lot of exploration in the passageways underneath the plateau, and there's a whole network of passageways there. And I experienced things inside the body of the Sphinx. I spent a lot of time inside the pyramids. I've climbed the pyramids, and it's a combination of intuition, insight, and measurement and academic research. I spent time in the Rare Books Library of the Faculty of Archaeology at Cairo University. They allowed me in there, and that has all right. field notes of everyone who ever did any ground research and excavations around the pyramids in four languages, German, French, Arabic, and English. And the National Museum has a library that you can only get in there if you're a university student. And the Canadian Embassy in Cairo and the Egyptian Embassy in Ottawa arranged to get me in there. And then the American University in Cairo as well. And they have right. stacks that have, you know, computer databases. And so combining all of that and a real passion to get to the bottom of it, I came up with the Pyramid Code.
Well, what I love about the Pyramid Code is really that you're not just talking about an ancient event. You're not just talking about the pyramids. What you're actually doing is you're linking it in to 2011, 2012, 2013, talking about the present moment. So it's just amazing how a lot of people walking down the street, they could say, oh, the pyramids are great, but how is it going to change my life? How is it going to affect my life? How is it going to help me pay these bills, you know? And what I got from the Pyramid Code is that you displayed it so beautifully, and it almost seems that whoever built the pyramids, they had a whole different perception about life, a whole different reality, a whole different consciousness, a whole different way of perceiving everything around them. And it's clearly known by archaeologists that they can't actually construct the pyramids again. They can't actually do it. They, you know, with all these technologies we have, we still don't understand how they were put together. There's theories, but no one can actually build them. So what I got from the Pyramid Code is that all of these mysteries are still unexplained, and they show us that, okay, was there an advanced race living before us? And, you know, why have we fallen? You know, why has humanity become so dumbed down that, you know, we've lost our superhuman, which are not really superhuman. They are our normal organic states. You know, why have we been distracted for so long?
Well, and the answer to why may not be as satisfying as simply understanding what we used to be able to do. And the person walking down the street who says, how am I going to pay my bills? My answer to that is, if you were living in ancient Egypt, there would be no bills because it's free energy. And this is how we have been enslaved and distracted, is because we have to pay for utilities, and not just nominal fees, huge sums of money right. we pay for utilities. And all of this, right. Nikola Tesla had the technology to have free energy a long time ago in 1910. And so we've been hoodwinked into thinking that we're supposed to work, work, work. And if you look at Egyptian, their life and the way they lived, they were dancing, they were in the in around flowers, they were having a great time. And it wasn't all about work, and it was about contributing to all of humanity. It wasn't me, mine, give me more. And so the entirety of the philosophy of how they did it and what they were able to do is what we're all supposed to be able to do. So they had abilities. And so now there's TV shows and movies that are showing people who, you know, can teleport and bilocate and manifest, flying around and able to do all these things, to be right. clairvoyant, clairaudient. Well, that's our birthright. We're supposed to be able to do all of that. And the ancients right. were well versed in it.
Well, that's funny you say that, because I definitely feel that, you know, we're living in an older landscape. A lot of us, I living in London, you know, in this busy city, you know, a lot of us, we feel this is the natural habitat for human beings. You know, you know, we feel that, you know, living in with all this architecture around us is natural, because what I've come to realize is that, you know, even in your Pyramid Code, you actually showed it so well that, you know, a lot of the architecture was so different. It was actually aligned in a certain way. You know, you talked about that, you know, in the pyramids, you know, they had resonate, you know, they were resonators, you know, they were sound chambers, you know, which is fascinating. You know, a lot of us, we forget that, you know, a lot of the architects of the past, you know, they were also, you know, they understood the natural principles of the universe.
Exactly.
As opposed to the architects now who are just working on contracts, you know,
well,
and aren't really interested in any universal kind of harmony or what have you.
Well, and that means that we're connecting. Okay, so let's start here at the beginning. The original word in the ancient Suf language, which is what the ancient Egyptians spoke, for pyramid was Per-Neter, house of nature. And that's what it is. It represents the distance to the moon and the circumference of the whole planet and all these cosmological facts. There's one shaft in the Great Pyramid that points to Sirius, which is, all signs are pointing that it's we're in a binary star system with Sirius, and they knew it. The position
right.
of the pyramids is connected to the sky-ground correlation, so the stars are connected to it, and they understood all of this. The temples themselves represent the cavities of the human body. So you
right.
enter and you surrender your lower self to your higher self, which is the symbolism of the winged disc, into the temple at the feet, and progress all the way through to the temple, and the Holy of Holies is positioned metaphorically to where the pineal gland is, which is our clairvoyance. And it's shaped like an acorn, and you see that the ancients even had distended skulls, which gave them more room to have an expanded pineal gland. But all of this
right.
is based on nature. Everything comes back to the Fibonacci sequence, to the phi ratio. Everything is connected, and we see it over and over in a sunflower, in a seashell. It's all about connecting to Gaia Sophia, the living body of Mother Earth. All of the other architecture in patriarchal times is about disconnect architecture from anthropology, from archaeology, from linguistics. Everything is separated. Universities don't talk to each other in different departments, and that's literal. And it's to disconnect us from nature, disconnect us from our feelings so that they can lie to us. And what we've got now is the epitome of this propaganda, disconnected people, medicated, pharmaceuticals, and we don't know anything anymore because we're not connected to
right.
nature. It's not normal. There is a new syndrome called nature deprivation for people who live in cities whose bodies are on concrete, surrounded with PVC plastic that the solar flares can't penetrate, and that's how we can become smarter, by being exposed to this energy coming from the sun, which is something the ancients
right.
absolutely understood. In Nefertiti and Akhenaten's time, where Tut was raised, King Tut, they understood solar energy. They weren't worshiping the sun. They were respecting the interaction of the solar energy with us. And so everything that's been said about ancient Egypt is looking through our damaged patriarchal lenses.
Right. Well, there's a lot to be said for the way that we live. A lot of us, like you just said, we're living in social amnesia, I call it. You know, we've forgotten, you know, whether or not it's on purpose or what have you. But, you know, we do live in a state of denial, a lot of us, and it's not really helping us. I know that you have the great phrase 360 senses, which I absolutely love, because, you know, we have five senses, so-called. You know, that is what we all have come to believe. And I love your whole concept of 360 senses. That, you know, it's just marvelous to realize that we really have not reached a zenith. You know, we have not actually reached the mountaintop. You know, a lot of us, we think we've arrived, but really, we haven't even gotten our feet wet in terms of our potential as human beings, because we have been distracted for so long. A lot of us, we're just slowly waking up out of the deep sleep.
But that happens, you know, exponentially quicker once we start to wake up. I like to think of the 360
right.
senses as if our body is surrounded by a sphere and we're standing inside, and the little cross points on the sphere are hooks where different senses can come together. There's a word called synesthesia, which means like you can hear a picture and the senses cross, and little children are able to do this. And so that's how we know that we know. And knowledge in our system is knowing what the teacher is asking for and giving back her answer on the test. But true knowledge is a deep connection to the self, where we're actually asking ourselves and getting a reaction, like with a pendulum or divining rods, where something, the energy opens up or it shuts down, and things come to us. But it's very much like a muscle. If we don't use it, it goes away. We have to develop these senses and we have to pay attention to it. But it's almost like handles on the chakras that they feed each other, and then you get a deeper level of knowledge from it. And as Hakim says in the Pyramid Code, knowing is a very deep power. But we have, you know, changed the meaning of the word knowledge. Even textbooks in school, texts are supposed to be the original texts, not some kind of bastardization and rewriting for somebody's agenda. So in right. some ways, it's absolutely brilliant that the super elite cabal or whoever they are that have controlled us and given us this propaganda have pulled it off. And it shows that we can be distracted and led down the garden path, but we also can keep our own empowerment and know things. And so we are standing at the juxtaposition where both are exactly true. We can get pulled into greater sensitivity and greater knowledge, or we can get sucked back into synthetics, pharmaceuticals, and disconnection. And we're at a choice point. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who are spontaneously realizing that they can do this, that they are also psychic, that right. they know who's calling before they see the caller ID. These sorts yeah. of things are an intuition. Take your umbrella. Well, the weather report said it wasn't going to rain. Take your umbrella. If you start to listen, then you realize that there is a higher power that is working with us, creating synchronicities. And if we don't believe it, then it'll happen again, and then we can't deny it. You know, showing.
Well, that's what I wanted to touch on. I wanted to touch on schools and universities. The last time you dived into infinite waters, you talked about there weren't schools and universities in ancient Egypt like there are today, you know, in terms of the same, you know, the same construction. And I find it fascinating that it almost seems that they had a different way of learning, a different way of teaching people. Please go into that in terms of how was the academic framework set up in terms of nurturing people's talents.
Okay, well, it wouldn't have been called academic. And there were still people, you know, farming and commoners in the villages. And then there was a class of initiates, high-level initiates. And they went through rigorous, rigorous training. And it's very much like yogis in India, for example. And so the way it worked was the chakra system lined up to the Nile itself, and there was a different temple for each chakra. And so it would almost be that the initiates would be schooled, if you will, and in mystery schools. And so they would be trained, and they would learn to contain a high amount of energy in their bodies. They would understand the polarities between the masculine and the feminine. They'd start by dealing with the root chakra at the Temple of Isis, which is the southernmost point, and they would learn sex magic and how all that worked. Now, we make all that taboo, and the Christians came in and, you know, chipped away at all the natural body parts that are depicted on the temple walls. But basically, the idea was that you can build an incredible charge in your body. And if it's, well, this is like tantra in the yogic traditions, that if you can contain it, you can use it in different ways instead of blowing out the energy. And so then they'd move on, you know, to the belly chakra, and they would deal with their fears. And the idea was that they could digest these fears, and that if you couldn't deal with your fears on an emotional level, you actually couldn't ascend farther. And so at Kamumbo, they had they would make the initiates swim with crocodiles and go through these narrow passageways. And I've been in these underground passageways under the Temple of Kamumbo, and you can see the tanks where they used to keep the crocodiles, and there's mummified crocodiles in the museum, which has been closed for the past two right. years. And Crocodiles have 80 teeth, and they can just eat big things that are whole and digest them. And I learned recently that a crocodile can't actually open their mouth underwater, so they weren't in as much danger as it would appear. But these were the initiations. They had to go through these tests, and then they would move on and go until they were prepared, so going through each of the chakras, to contain an incredible amount of energy. So they would build themselves to the eighth level of initiation. And then if they were able, worthy and able, and if the training had worked, then they would be allowed to enter the Band of Peace. So they would appear on barges. The Nile went right in front of the pyramids, and the initiates would arrive blindfolded and naked and step out onto the plateau and be handed a robe in their bare feet. And then they would live there, and it was all telepathic. People would tone, and it's not that they didn't use their voice, but we didn't have to talk. And the initiates had to be initiated by the high priestess in order to go to the ninth level of initiation, which is what the transmutation of the atom became possible. So it's almost like they're supercharged. They'd be initiated one at a time in the second pyramid, which actually was known as the Great Pyramid then. And there's a passageway that goes underneath from the Sphinx temple all the way, and the high priestess would meet them. And these passageways are only about 3 feet high. They'd sit on a little magic carpet, literally a silk carpet, and fly along, and the initiates would meet them. And then they would literally be charged, like plugging a plug into a socket, and it gets an electric charge. And that would raise their energy level to the ninth level. And then the transmutation of the atom has to do with blowing the hydrogen and the oxygen molecule apart. And we are largely water, 70% or so water. And so once you can do that, then telepathy is an ability that comes to you. Build charge of energy. And what if the item arrived in my hand, and I said, oh, yippee, this is mine, and went away, then you'd never get to do it again. So it's just that it happened to land in your hand, but it was a group manifestation. Everything was for the whole, for all of humanity. And I mentioned before bilocation, teleportation, alchemy, right? So these are the abilities that the ancients were able to attain. And so when you see on the temple walls the bands that they wore on their upper arms, and on their wrists and ankles, the ones from the upper arms were saying that they were trained in sex magic. And the ones on the wrists and ankles were to hold an energy field so that when they were human divining rods, part of a cosmic energy, so they would take the cosmic energy and ground it into the earth. They would take the telluric energy and able to join it to the cosmos. So this is very much like our neural synapses. The hormones don't touch. The synapses don't touch. A hormone jumps across and gives us the ability to connect with our brain so we can move our hand or anything else we do. And so the initiates were human divining rods that were the connection between the cosmos and the earth. So when I see reenactments of Egypt, it's laughable because they're not standing straight. You can see they're not channeling energy through their bodies. They're just kind of hunched over and standing there. And that's not it at all. Because they would, what I say, get electromagneticuted. They could die if this energy came to them and they weren't prepared. Through diet, through meditation, through everything connecting them, they wouldn't be able to handle the amount of energy that was coming from the pyramid fields. And so the high-level initiates were actually part of this energy machine that connected all the way around the planet. And there's thousands and thousands of pyramids all over the world, all connected to the cosmology and the Pleiades and Orion and Sirius, and all mapping out a vast knowledge.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people aren't really clear what the Great Pyramids were built for. You know, we have the traditional Egyptologist saying it's a tomb. Some people are saying aliens put it there. You know, other people are saying it's a power plant. Yet no one really actually, you know, it's still such a mystery. It's just there in perfect alignment, you know, with the stars, you know, Sirius and what have you. And it just seems that, you know, why would this thing be created in the first place? People are saying it could have taken 20 years to build if people were working 24/7. Some people are saying no human being could have built this. In your own experience, your research, how do you feel, how do you think they got there, who built them, and what's their overall purpose?
Okay.
Well, you know, what?
Tough question.
It's not an easy one. It's
a large question, because in order to answer it, we have to remove ourselves from everything we think here. And we have to also understand how we've been prevented from connecting the dots by design, okay? And so to say they're tombs is just to say, it's like, you know, in matriarchal cultures, it was blood from life, in that menstrual blood was the highest form of DNA. Now it's blood from death, and then we're shooting everybody, and we've got a bloodbath. Well, let's just say it's a tomb then. So the pyramids were for death. Well, that's us. That's what we do to everything. No. First of all, they've never found a mummy in any pyramid ever, and that's not enough to stop traditionalists from saying that that's the only thing they could think of. And they're determined to repeat the story that's the official story. And same thing with, you know, there's an official story with 911, and then there's all kinds of information around it that discredits that. So if we can just wipe the board clean and start over again and think about a golden age where things were functioning and we were concerned about all of humanity being connected, then we can see that there is a band that goes all the way around the planet, not on the level of the equator, but almost, let's say, if you're drawing an X across the equator, more on that angle. If we understand that we've also had many pole shifts, and that's proven through geology and looking at the Mid-Atlantic Rift and the angles of iron filings, that shows that they align when it's molten in bands. So we have an understanding of that sort of thing. So if we were in a different wave on a high note instead of a low note, and that there were large pyramids and sacred sites in a complete band that went all the way around the pyramid, around the planet, this was to maintain a stability, an energetic stability on the planet. It was to feed the people. It was energetic food for humanity. And so all of what you said, power plants, sure, it was definitely generating energy. It still generates energy, even though it's in tremendous disrepair, and the casing stones have been taken off, and the grid of the whole planet is vibrating at a lesser degree than it used to. Okay, so that would be like, you know, taking the wire that you put into the wall and taking the rubber off it and just leaving the wires exposed. It doesn't work the same way. You need the casing stones.
Right.
The other thing is that it functioned with water, and so there's a honeycomb network of passageways underneath the entirety of the Band of Peace, which is like 20 miles long with six pyramid sites. And there's evidence of these passageways all the way from one end to the other. And when the Nile would flood, it would fill them up. And then all the different construction of the kinds of stone, like building with stone, actually was quite clever, because quartz crystal is inside granite. And when there's compression on quartz, it produces a mild form of energy. Now, but the energy was implosion energy instead of explosion energy. So it wasn't like a rocket ship burning up a bunch of fuel. That's, again, us. You know, this, sorry to say it, but ejaculation fantasies of things that blow up. That's what we're all about, because it's patriarchal,
right,
as opposed to magnetic and a matriarchal kind of energy that is sustainable and free, as I said before. So if you can imagine that we had anti-gravity, levitation is one of the abilities. So there were devices that would allow, and also laser technology that allowed to cut some of the stones. But I am 100% with Davidovits, Joseph Davidovits, who did experiments on poured stone and looked at the difference of stone that we have now that's synthetically created or that's cut, and you can't tell the difference. And so when you look at the Valley Temple, which is similar to the Assyrian close to Abydos and Stonehenge, the construction of the stones actually looks similar to what you see in South America, and I call them marshmallow stones when you look at Machu Picchu, because they almost look like yeasted bread. So you'd put the stones there and they would be liquefied. And if you think about Machu Picchu, you have to go up 12,000 feet. Well, where's the stone coming from? How are you going to get it all the way up there? And if you think about Abu Roush on the north point of the Band of Peace, it's up a mountain. So when you say 20 years of building the pyramid, that's setting a stone every minute, 24/7. And they're saying that they stacked them and they had ramps. Well, where are you going to stand to put the top ones on? Like, none of it makes any sense. Mm. What we have to just completely wipe out our idea about cranes. And they still show that the pyramids were built with little spikes. Come on, copper chisels. You can't.
And people still fall for it.
But like, if you think about it, like, yeah. You know, just gets me all excited when I start thinking about it. Because if something doesn't make sense, we buy it anyway. And one of the mind control techniques, or the major mind control technique that they've used on us, is confusion and absurdity. And we buy it. And it's been said, the bigger the lie, the more we believe it. So back to what the pyramids were. Okay. So I say some of the stone was poured, and you examine the limestone around the pyramids and some of the stones that they're actually constructed of, you see that there's shell in it. And so it could have been a water table right up to Abu Roush, if you look. I mean, if we're talking extreme antiquity, 2450 BC, forget it. They did the last renovation there. It's like the last time you painted your house isn't the day that it was constructed. And so there's been many, many things that the pyramids have been used for. They're multi-purpose, multi-dimensional. Now, were there aliens that helped? Well, right now, a lot of people channel. They channel the Ascended Masters. They know Archangel Michael. We read channeled material. And so to the Egyptians, that was normal, that we're multidimensional beings that come from off planet. We are starseed. And so why wouldn't we be conversing with a being that's disincarnate? Now, this makes perfect sense to me. And when you look at the cosmology of the ancients and the ceiling, newly cleaned ceiling in the first hypostyle hall of the Temple of Dendera in Egypt, it's the map. It's the star map of the cosmos. It's the zodiac. It's other planets. It's how we went through stargates. The idea of teleportation and bilocation makes sense. I mean, we watched it on Star Trek, and everybody loves to watch that. So the beam me up, Scotty, and dematerializing our body and rematerializing somewhere else. So I think the ancients were actually going between different realities, and so it could be that they were empowered by another being that knew more. They were guided, that they understood. And they had technology from other planets that was more sophisticated. So I don't think it's a spaceship that appeared that created a tractor beam. I think it was built by physical beings standing here. But that we had such sophisticated technology that there were lifters and nudgers and tones, like the Tibetans. They have these huge, like 7-8 foot horns that they would blow, and that they can create resonance right. fields, sound harmonics that cross. And there's telluric currents in the earth, and this all combined with the human divining rods and the consciousness adds up to being able to have these abilities of levitation. And so when you say bilocation, the Egyptians, you know, the kids thing, abracadabra, I'm going to magically do something to you. Well, think about it. Ba, ra, ka. Okay, so the ba is the body double. The ka is the part of, I'm getting that backwards. The ka is the body double. The ba is the part of you that doesn't die. So the Egyptians weren't obsessed with death. They understood you don't die, that you're flipping between realities. Mm. You could end up on another planetary system. You have to densify to incarnate here. There's blurry lines between these multidimensional aspects and these higher dimensional beings. And the Egyptians were fully conversant with them. And many people here now, psychics and otherwise, are fully conversant with beings from elsewhere. So it's not like a little gray alien came along and went, whoop, and here comes a pyramid. It was a huge, sophisticated communication. But it didn't take a huge number of people. And it wasn't slaves being whipped. That's us. We're enslaved. And as long as they keep showing us that we're enslaved, then everybody else has to have been enslaved. And the one guy with the power, you know, making everybody do their work, that's us. That's the model. That's the cultural myth that our psyche...
I think when you were last time on the show, you said we can't look with 21st century eyes. We can't look at the ancients with 21st century eyes, you know, and I feel that that was such a powerful statement you made back then, because we're still looking at the ancients as we look at ourselves today.
Yeah, but if you understood how healthy they were, how conscious they were, consciousness was the highest value, not how much stuff you have or how much money you can rob people of. You know, like if you can't, in our culture, if you can't see it, it's not there. Well, we've completely shut off a whole side of our brain. Well, the ancients used to wear these devices that connected the two hemispheres of their brain, like a crown. And so everything adds up to them being completely connected to telluric energy. And the placement of the pyramids is where two of these connecting ley lines, or dragon lines, as they call them in China, connect. And so if you have, if you could imagine these, also there's these things that look like satellite dishes that are made out of quartz crystal. And of course, through our lenses, we say, oh yeah, that was for killing cows and the blood would drip out the hole. Well, they're not bloodstained, A, and B, they're only about 13 inches across. So I don't know what cow you're talking about that's going to fit in there. And it just, none of it makes sense, but they just throw out all this stuff, you know, that they were, you know, the Egyptians were crazy and, you know, that's all you need. That, you know, they were obsessed with death and, you know, it's just
right.
And then everybody goes, oh, okay, which is again, confusion and absurdity. And so a lot of people go to Egypt, you know, thinking they're going to be bathed in mysteries, and you get the guides telling you all this stuff, and they leave and they go, oh, and then forget all about it because they can't compute it. So if you think about the combination of these incredible high-level initiates who had abilities, this powerful telluric currents that are being charged up with the pyramids, and know that before the pyramids were built, there was something else on those platforms. So the integrated field and the sky-ground correlation was established long before. And you think about the river being in a different place and the way that the river and the water helped with these energies. So, and then the channeling of other beings, synthetic, poured stone makes it easier. And they used molds. When you look at some of the temples along the Nile, you'll see that there's repeated patterns. Well, they could have poured that. What's the matter with thinking about concrete? And it wouldn't be concrete. It would be a higher level stone than that. But why couldn't you mix it and set it, pouring it, and let it cure? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. So I say it's a combination of both those things. And then they had the sophisticated technology that allowed them to do laser cutting. There's diamond drill bit marks. There's, you know, huge, huge machines. And there's evidence of machine tool marks. The perfection of the straight edges and the flat stones and the joining marks are way beyond what we can do now. And so all of this was working in harmony. These bowls were positioned. That's what the hole was for. And they were like relay. And so there was all kinds of devices like the schist stone that would turn and make a sound that was similar to the heartbeat of the earth. You know, so if you can imagine this sound and light technology and resonance fields and everybody working in harmony with, you know, like all of it starts to make sense when you put it all together that way. So it was a unified field joining with all these other sacred sites all the way around this band that goes around the planet. And everything was about sustaining an energy and elevating humanity to a higher level of consciousness, because we knew that the golden age was going to pass us, because we're going through various cycles of time that bring us closer to the galactic center and then farther away from it. So now we're at the absolute farthest part from the juicy energy at the middle. And 2012 is depicting how we're going to turn the corner and start going back toward higher level consciousness. And so we've been getting less and less and less and less and less of this energy as we hit the magic point. But we're in a transition phase already for that. So when you look at it that way, does it make more sense to you, Ralph?
You know, so much was uncovered in your documentary, The Pyramid Code, and I really encourage everyone in the Infinite Waters family and beyond to take a look at that if you haven't already now, because it's been everywhere. I don't know how you could have missed it. One thing I wanted to ask you is, when we look at our world today in this information age, the world seems to be run on symbolism. Logos, illustrations, advertisers are after us. And the Egyptian culture, the ancient Egyptians seemed to be very artistic people. They displayed, you know, such powerful imagery, and they seemed to use symbols in a different way as we use them today. When you ask an average person on the street, what does symbols mean to you? What does logos mean to you? Then they will say, okay, well, a McDonald's symbol means something like this. Or, you know, how do you think the ancients used symbols, you know, if you're comparing them to how we use them today, was there any difference?
Well, sure, because, I mean, if you're more conscious, then you don't just look at something and accept it. Like most people would say, what symbol? You know, like looking at car logos and stuff, they don't know that they're looking at the Pleiades or something that's, you know, part of something greater. But the Egyptians were schooled in this. They were taught. But the way I think about Egyptian symbolism is that if we accept the idea of reincarnation and the soul coming back, which was outlawed in the Council of Nicene in 323 AD by Emperor Constantine. Okay, no more reincarnation. You only live once. That's how we're going to, you know, that's the propaganda we're going to tell everybody. Well, if we knew in the Golden Age that everything was going to come crashing down and there would be no peace and there'd be a bloodbath, right? And we would come to this dark, dark, the darkest of dark, and that's the Amun. We still say Amen, but the Amun is the dark, right? And that's the phase we're in now, just about to turn to Heper, which is dawn. Okay. If we knew we were going to come back to help humanity go through this transition, and we had to leave symbols for ourselves to remember, and yet we were in such a state that we couldn't understand anything, what would we leave to trigger us? That's what's on the temple walls. That's what all the symbolism is about, because it appeals to the unconscious. But then you've got the Egyptian guide talking in your ear, telling you it's something else. Patriarchal warring Ramses, which was the end, which is the end of the dynastic period. The other thing that's completely relevant here is that 3113 BC, the beginning of the Mayan calendar, is the first dynasty of Egypt. So this has been the patriarchal period that's been about blinding us and making it all about war. And there was a couple of periods within the dynasties, particularly the 18th dynasty, where the old spiritual ways percolated back through, and that's what we're looking at. So these symbols are meant to trigger us, but it also goes hand in hand with the energetics being in such a place that we can understand them. We get help from one another, and so there's a couple of key authors that have really given us a new set of eyes to look at, and I credit Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, well, the cast of characters in the Pyramid Code. And people like William Henry and Chris Dunn, you know, they come up with original material. And I say they're reincarnates from these times. And they're remembering. Mm. That's all we're doing, is we're remembering the time. We know there's something wrong with it. That's what those things are.
Well, I definitely see a big rush for a lot of people are hungry for information in terms of how can I improve my life as we move towards 2012 and beyond. A lot of people, you know, I'm coming into contact with, are really looking for answers because they realize something is wrong with society as we see it today. It's just not working. You know, it's really reached its boiling point. And when we were talking off the air, you talked of how, although the internet is such a powerful tool, there's also a lot of misinformation out there, which I also agree with, that you know, we seem to think that, you know, we are living in the creme de la creme. You know, everything is so wonderful. And at the same time, we don't realize that there's also a lot of misinformation out there to lead us once again back into the loop of ignorance.
We have greed. We have no peace. They give guns to people to shoot animals and people. The creme de la creme. We are at the bottom of the trough in a bloodbath. Nothing's working. the generation that's, you know, like, it's just a craziness out there. But as long as they keep saying, wonderful, 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 you're so lucky, fine. But a lot of people are really suffering by this incredible narcissism. Me, 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 me. Well, the Egyptians never would have thought of that. It was the collective. Everything was about all of us. Now, the Indians have an idea called the Bodhisattva. And the idea of that is that as long as anyone is suffering on the planet, we're not free. Even if we can ascend, unless everybody ascends, our job's not done. And so all of this divisiveness and fighting and proprietary, you know, everything's what you can own is ridiculous. When you get to the pearly gates, they don't want to know how much you have or how much you took. They want to know how much you gave. If you give of yourself, and there can be giving in disguise to get, like giving you a coupon and then you're supposed to pay them more money. And so we've got it completely, completely backwards. And it's because our cultural myth has been switched out. And I know this because of the Nag Hammadi texts, which were found down the road from the Temple of Dendera. And they were found in 1945. And it's kind of like the Dead Sea Scrolls, but they were found up in Lebanon, I guess. And it's got the story written in a divine feminine voice. When they were found, the Christian zealots took over. They were already destroying the temples, and they misinterpreted them. So my PhD is technically in linguistics, and the turn of phrase, but by a difference in a preposition, or not understanding gender, masculine, feminine. Some languages don't compute like that. Verb tenses. You can easily misconstrue something if you're translating it from the ancient Aramaic. But these texts talk about the earth being alive, Gaia Sophia, us being interactive with her, her having faith in us. So what did the Christian zealots do? They said, oh, no, 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 it's not a feminine. It's an old man in the sky who's going to strike you down and strike your children down. Make you pay.
Right.
You pay him, and you have to have faith in him. Well, you know what that does? That changes because we have a cultural, you switch out the cultural myth and give a punitive God and say that you don't reincarnate and you've got to pay for your sins. And the way Jesus came to help you was he got tortured and killed. Well, what does that do to your psyche? And every time you go into a church, you see a guy hanging on a cross, which is like, we're going to come and get you. You're enslaved to us. And it's worked. Look what it's done to us. And that's the wrong cultural myth. That's a fabrication of the patriarchy. And if you think about the propaganda that goes through the church, the Inquisition, if you believed in any of these techniques, that's where tarot cards came from and numerology, all of that had to go underground and symbolic. Esoteric arts, herbs, all the magic that went with that. Magic, Egypt magic, it fits together. And then, nope, 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 nope. If you believe in that, we're going to torture you and kill you so that it ruins the DNA. And people come back in the next life and they've got cellular memory of being tortured when they look at tarot cards. Oh, no, that's evil. After they finish the Inquisition, killing like 9 million people, mostly children and women.
Right.
Then they go on to
I mean, well, witches were burnt on the stake,
and then they go on to the missions. And then they go and do this in other countries. Well, what's the Vatican? They're thieves. You know, lopped off heads from all the statues. And the Vatican is massively loaded with all this stuff they've stolen. And then there's like two rooms, little tiny rooms with a Pope's outfit and stuff. But they're stealing the symbolism. The funny shaped hat is like the crowns in Egypt. You know, there's so many symbols that they took from Egyptian culture. But then they turn it around. So it's not really winter solstice, it's Christmas Day, and they borrowed all these different things, including the black, white, and red of the Virgin Mother and Crone. And so they twisted all these symbols, turned us all into slaves, punish us, and take the cultural myth away, and then say that they're holier than thou. I mean, what an incredible scam and a crime against humanity.
Right. And it's been working.
And it worked. Not only that, it worked.
And it works. It works. It's just amazing how much deception. I say that we're living in the age of deception. And, you know, because we just are so gullible as human beings. A lot of us, we don't question. We're not really taught to question as children in schools or what have you. We're just taught to accept and conform.
But it's worse than that. It's worse than that, Ralph. If you question anything, they medicate you. And it's all synthetic. Hakim called it the age of plastic. Even synthetic medication, it's all synthetic. It's all toxic. You know, if it's natural, they want to take it away from us. You want to grow a garden, they say you can't. You know, it's like, it's all about power and control and taking people's empowerment away. It's power over instead of empowerment. That's what has to change.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I think, you know, your words are just the exact same words of Aldous Huxley, who said that, you know, when people actually begin to love their slavery, you know, that's the goal, you know, and that seems what's happening. You know, we're actually enjoying our slavery. Slavery has become something very normal. And I think with people like you and I who are, and other people out there really raising the awareness, is actually helping move forward, you know, just the, you know, the awareness, you know, where I think is really important, because otherwise we can actually fall into a sleep again. You know, because, you know, time is an illusion.
Well, I don't enjoy it. I don't like utility bills. I don't like talking to somebody who's just putting out rules. I don't like what the banking system's doing. I don't think that interest or insurance or taxes have any, you know, have anything to do with anything. That it's all fabricated and all the money goes to the same people. And I think it's absolutely criminal. And we could be free of all that. Think about living. Instead of having three jobs and, you know, following all the rules of society. I don't know who enjoys slavery, but personally, I don't.
I don't either, you know, it's just amazing how, as I look at it, how everything is set up. I come to realize that there's sorcery involved, and certain people have certain technology, certain knowledge about what this place we call planet Earth is, and you know, they use it for their own gain, but essentially they study, and they have been studying continuously, and they guard the information. It's probably in a vault somewhere, you know, but you know, just to really keep it between themselves. But then if you say that, then you're a conspiracy theorist.
Well, call it whatever you want. So, a lot of stuff's in the Vatican Library. And they have studied it. But the thing is that it's all about, I said it before, blood from death instead of blood from life and control. That's not what we're supposed to be doing here. We're supposed to be evolving. And instead of finances being the highest value, consciousness is the highest value. And look into, you know, pictures in Congress. There's no windows. There's no plants. It's all these old men who get into limousines and don't go down and see the man on the street. They're supposed to be representing people. They're not. It's all a lie. And we're not okay. People are suffering. And maybe they accept it because there's nothing they can do about hyperinflation. But it's just wrong. It's wrong to hurt people, to kill people, to toxify people's children. You know, it's terrible. Like the malpractice, like, again, a doctor is a god, holier than thou. Don't question me. Take this medication. Oops, sorry, wrong medication. We killed you. Too bad. We have insurance. We don't have to care that we killed you.
Right.
You know, there's suicide. I mean, pharmaceutical drugs, side effect is suicide. How absurd is that? And they keep on increasing the size of the DSM, now 4, then they're going to go to 5, with all these different, if you can label a disorder, then you can give a medication for it. And they repackage the medication, change the pill from pink to blue, and package it for somebody, something else. And as long as people are medicated on and the fluoride's in the water and aspartame and all of that and chemtrails all connects, how the heck are we supposed to wake up? But we're waking up anyway. The patriarchy is a failed experiment. It didn't work.
Well, I definitely feel that your pyramid code is really, it's just inspiring. It was very inspiring documentary to come. You know, what was your main aim in making the pyramid code?
Okay, here it is. To trigger high-level initiates who already know. That's who it was for. So right. Those of us that were there when the pyramids were built, okay. Those of us that lived that life with sanity and flowers, trees, chirping birds, you know, pleasure, right? To remember and say, yeah, I remember that. And those are the kinds of emails right. I get from people. I remember. I know you're right.
Well, I put the interview we did from 2009 on my YouTube and, you know, had so many hits because it just showed the, you know, people were hungry for this kind of information. People were really interested and people really embraced it. And, you know, it's wonderful to see that. At the same time, you know, on the other side of the spectrum, I've come to realize that, we're living in a jungle. And, you know, the reason why there are so many wars on the planet is simply because there are so many different perceptions, so many different programs running, so many different ways of seeing this thing. And it's just fascinating that I think more and more, you know, this spell which humanity has been cast under, slowly it's becoming broken.
That's right.
Because we are the glue holding this reality together.
And there's
together.
An awful lot more of us than there are of them.
Right, right. That's the whole thing. You know, we are the binding.
See, I don't think that people want to fight each other or that terrorists are holding resentment or that Middle Eastern people are negative in any way. I've spent too much time in the Middle East. I've been to 52 different countries, and Egypt counts as one, and I've been there 25 times. I've been around. The people of the earth all want the same thing, love and respect. And anyone who's had a child right. isn't going to go out and kill somebody else's child in terms of women, right? And anyway, so you can, but I think that the powers that be have drummed up a storm, upset people, sell guns to both sides and leave and let them, you know, hurt each other because people are desperate. Because they've disadvantaged them and they've taken, you know, their natural resources and everything. And then people will do a lot if they're trying to feed their family, you know, and so, you know, if you're threatened in such a way, you'll react and you can drive people crazy. And they've been doing all this mind control and, you know, these disturbances and giving synthetic drugs and vaccinations and everything. And then people and training people on video games, which is all about killing. And you get disconnected from the fact that it's a real person. And if you disconnect people enough, they will go do those crazy things. But if you create a context of love and creativity and all that stuff, and if we're going to, you know, disseminate good news and you know, positive scientific discoveries and that sort of thing, everyone would change. They have engineered this. And all they've proven is that if you want to, you know, drive evil into everybody, then you can get away with this sort of thing.
Right.
But did it work in the end? I mean, our planet is suffering. I mean, enough's enough now. Enough is enough.
Well, I think it's all about moving forward now. And I think that's, you know, the pyramid code really left me with so much hope, really. And in terms of moving forward, that we are really the original technology. And that's the beauty of it. You know, all of these external manifestations are really just reflections. And, you know, your pyramid code really highlighted that. And actually, you know, the Infinite Waters family loved you.
You just said something. You just said something. That we are the technology. That's brilliant. Because it's true.
Right.
It's not mechanical. It's an interaction between the humanity of us, the power of who we are, the wisdom, the 360 senses, the sphere that communicates. But, you know, when you stand next to somebody, your sphere is interfacing with their sphere, right? And if we could just get,
right.
the overarching, it's almost like having a web page with all the guts and bells and whistles and videos and books and links. And then we put an overarching front page on it, home page on it, that points to all of the material. By changing the cultural myth, the overarching directive changes everything, but it doesn't change the guts of it. You understand what I'm saying? So if we can change our cultural myth back to the idea that we commune with nature, that we don't know what's going to happen next because it's an interactivity, that we can help create that. If we can keep ourselves positive, I call it the lions at the gate, where we cannot afford the luxury of a single negative thought. Then we bring ourselves into this empowered state, and we co-create the beauty with nature, that every living being is beautiful and contributing to us. I mean, the fact that, you know, they even kill whales still is just, you know, it's inconceivable to me that we would even think that way. But it's disconnected people who have been programmed the other way. We can change, change that. And children want that. You know, you don't have to convince a child of that. We can just save them from being medicated. But they're going into schools. They're asking questions like, you know, do you sometimes feel down? Do you sometimes have trouble sleeping? Are you sometimes up and sometimes down? Oh, yeah, you need to be medicated. You're depressed. Well, you don't think it's depressing that they're all of what's going on the planet? And to call it a window of tolerance, that we only have a certain amount of capability of facing these destructive things, depleted uranium, whatever else, right? We shut down. We can't take it. Even thinking that our government has betrayed us and 911 was an inside job, for some people, they want you to stop talking. And so it's I don't try to convince anybody. I mean, in a conversation like this, you're inviting me to. And we're having a conversation, and you agree with a lot of things I'm saying. But I don't go out and try to convince anybody of my thinking. But I understand that people have a limited capacity, and that's what we need to do, is increase our capacity for ambiguity, join together with one another. Because what happens is we isolate when we're shutting down because we can't cope with the negativity, and then we want to distract ourselves. So when the psyche cannot resolve an issue, it seeks distraction. This is the door compensation theory. Okay. And so what we need is to, people say, well, what should I do? What can I do? I want to help. Right. Which is why with my new project, interactiveyou.com, it's an online learning and social action network, right? Which is about doing something. So Francis Bacon said, the greatest end of life is not knowledge, but action. This is where we're going. We band together and we do what we can, and we change the cultural myth back to what it's supposed to be, and commune with nature and love each other.
Well, as we're winding down, please just talk about your project, your upcoming project. It sounds so interesting. We were talking off air, so please just share it with the family and let us know what other projects you have going on. I know you've got the tour coming up, so please just
okay. So it's interactive-u.com, and all I've got up there now is a sign-up sheet for subscriptions, and I've been building the back office. And right now, a dedicated server is just being created for me. And so what it is cheap courses, $129. I've got 12 faculties with 4 courses in each. And the model is iTunes meets YouTube meets Facebook. So there'll be an interactive view page for every person in the system and showing courses they've taken, courses they want to take, and social action that they're taking. And so each course has got to have a social action component to it, which means you go do something and help. It's video driven, so some of the courses are about how to build a video. It's all about everything we've been talking about fits with this model. So it's about moving forward. Anything that supports the old system, forget it. It's about taking us into the new way. Personal empowerment, because most people have degrees in worthlessness. They can't get a job. So we need to be able to build a website, make business cards, be an entrepreneur, find your passion, and be self-standing and learn to publish. People will publish, professors will publish, and then there's no textbook, so it'll be a download for 99 cents or $5.99, depending on what it is, all the way up, but nothing more than $9.99 for a full feature movie kind of thing. So depending on how much time and talent it takes to make certain things. So people will be downloading from anywhere in the system. You can cross over between faculties and do all of that. Oops. Sorry about that.
No problem.
And so that's the iTunes part, where it's cheap, but then people can publish within the system if they've reached a level where the quality of their work is high enough. So little videos, YouTube videos, that sort of thing. Oh, stop. So, so they can publish and then they make money. And so then they can take another course.
Right.
And so the first person who heard about it said, I know what this is. It's the democratization of accomplishment, which is a beautiful way of putting it. And so everybody has, it's an interactive view page, which is like a Facebook page, in an interactive view educational context. So the idea is that many, many people from all over the world can join in, and it can be translated into various languages. So I'm prepared to have it go multilingual and certainly international. And I've been teaching online now for 11 years, and I definitely made it my business to understand what makes people adopt technology. Lots of people are afraid that, you know, oh, what if I don't have the computer skills? But actually, it's pretty straightforward, but the computer can teach you how to do it. So there's video tutorials to show you how to get involved. And once people get their feet wet and see how the online platform works, they'll see it's quite straightforward. Okay, I don't know how to talk.
Right. You're popular.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so well, I'm very excited about it. Very sophisticated platform. I've had an IT guy building it. He used to do the... Oh, stop. He used to do the encryption for the UN, right, and for the CIA. And so he's helping me make it work so that all the, you know, the numbers of people can be managed within this system. So we're just about ready to roll it out. Stop. And sorry.
Right, no problem. Well, I mean, it sounds wonderful, actually. Yeah, I know you've also got a tour coming up as well. Just, take a minute or two just to tell us about that.
It's the Magic Egypt 11-11-11. And I was there for 10-10-10 in the Great Pyramid. So we're doing 11-11-11 and 12-12-12. We'll be inside the Great Pyramid privately with our group. And the tour takes people to anywhere we're allowed to go that's in the pyramid code. And so it's basically like a live pyramid code. And most people who come on the trip will have watched the series. And then when you come home and you watch it again, it'll be a lot more meaningful to see how all the dots connect. And so that's November 7th to 21st. I've got a few places left, but I've definitely got a full group. I'm confident that things are good in Egypt.
Oh,
and clear. And I'm also building two books. One is a video book with William Henry called Lost Keys of the Sacred Feminine, Decoding Dendera, and the ceiling of the first hypostyle hall, huge expanse, has got the entirety of the cosmology and the story from the ancient Egyptians, and that has not been interpreted yet because they're still finishing cleaning it. And the other one that I'm working on is called Aliens in Ancient Egypt, Close Encounters
wow.
and the Reincarnation of Starseeds. And I'm writing that with Xavier Hayes. And it's a new page books book, like a publisher book. And it'll also be an e-book as well. The other one with William Henry is a video book. And so we're doing that ourselves. And so, I'm excited about these projects for sure.
Well, Dr. Carmen, it's really just been an honor to have you dive with us into infinite waters again, really. We've been blessed. We really have. And I really feel that your work is inspiring, not only to me, but so many people I know who have actually seen the Pyramid Code have really gone away with feeling just more alive. It's just a magnificent, monumental work. So definitely keep on and, keep doing what you do. I definitely feel the time we're living in now is just so immense. You know, it's just so many possibilities and opportunities. So definitely, I definitely thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, because I know that, you know, in this day and age, time is of the essence.
Well,
so thanks definitely for cutting into your day and, diving with us into
infinite
waters.
Well, I appreciate it too, because I think that these conversations are vital. You're well informed. You've been interviewing a lot of interesting people for a long time. And I think there's a synergy that comes together that does help move us forward. I think this is a very worthwhile thing, particularly since it's archived and people can access it asynchronously. And I think this is what it's about. I definitely feel a sense of urgency that we don't have much time to pull all this together. And I think everybody's doing their part and coming forward with a puzzle piece. And, you know, years ago, I never would have dreamt of co-authoring a book, but I'm seeing how the collaboration is just magical, really. And so we're in it together. And when people come to Egypt, they experience, you know, their own empowerment. And it definitely is life-changing, because just being inside the Great Pyramid really does something to you, the cellular matrix, because you end up part of that, part of the environment that is designed to affect you and raise consciousness. So there's a lot to look forward to. And I think that the old system is crumbling before our eyes. And even though they're in their last kicks and they're getting quite nasty on the way out the door,
right.
But good riddance. They need to go, don't you think?
Oh, I think they've had their time. So it's definitely time to turn a new page, really. I think people are ready for that. So, you know, I think globally people are realizing the deception, and people, you know, want to do away with it as quick as possible, just to really begin to, you know, start to breathe, you know, because the air has been polluted.
Well,
so
and
long.
Well said, because a lot of people, a comment that they make is, I can breathe easy again after they watch the Pyramid Code, which is interesting, because the patriarchy has had us in a stranglehold, and we could change the whole thing in a few months, end world hunger and all of that, as long as there's a block, you know, cutting off Africa, you know, just choking things and hurting people, keeping people
right.
in crisis. But if that was abated, and, you know, if people were released financially somewhat, all of this will clear up really quickly, I think. I'm very optimistic about that. We've just got to loosen that stranglehold.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I definitely hope that you could dive with us again, you know, in the near future to discuss, because I think that the Pyramid Code is so vast that, you know, it's going to take a lot of shows, and it's, you know, I know it's not just the Pyramid Code. You have other projects as well, which I'm really interested in you sharing the information with the audience. So, Infinite Waters family. But once again, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule just to dive with us. And I hope you can join
Always
us again.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ralph. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much. And have a wonderful day there in Canada.
And you a wonderful evening in the UK.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I definitely appreciate that. And to everyone out there in the Infinite Waters, continue to dive into Infinite Waters, and don't forget to question everything.
Infinite Waters Radio.